Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome. This is your host, Amelia Rose, and you are listening to the Dr. Rose Show. Every Monday night at 7:30 p.m., we discuss complex family challenges and help you, our listeners, find meaningful solutions. The topic tonight is just one of those challenges that families face, but rarely do we want to talk about it, and that the topic tonight is suicide, the not-so-silent killer. We are going to be on the air. Hopefully, my guest will log in. I haven't seen her yet, but we are going to be on the air, hopefully, for 60 minutes. That's an hour. And we have designated the last 10 minutes of the show for you to ask questions or for you to share comments regarding anything that you will hear tonight on the show. And as I said, I am waiting for my guests, and I have not seen anyone signing on. I hope we haven't lost anyone because of the difference in time. So I'm going to give folks another few minutes as we go ahead and just do an interlude here. We're just going to give another few minutes to see if my guests show up here.
Thank you.
Dr. Rose, how are you doing?
Hi. I think my guest has finally arrived.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So,
am I late?
Yes, but we were giving you a few minutes to get on so I can do my sound check.
Okay, wonderful.
But that's okay. Again, folks, thank you for your patience. Tonight, as I said, we were going to be talking about suicide, the not-so-silent killer. And as I mentioned earlier, that we have a special guest with us tonight, Dr. Saguna Anasuri. I always murder her name. I hope I'm getting better as the years go by. she's an associate professor from the Alabama A&M University in Huntsville. And we usually have a listener from Huntsville, so hopefully he will join us later on the show. What we want to do is just give you a brief, and as I said, this is a brief description of her bio, and it's not going to give her any half of what she has accomplished. So if you really want to learn more about her, you have to scout her out on the internet. But I met Dr. Anasuri, I think it was 2001, when I was doing research on developing a parenting education center. And one of the things that drew me to her is her welcoming attitude that won me over. And, of course, you know, this is why I try to follow you everywhere you go. she's a native of India and earned a PhD in child development, double master's in human development and family studies. She previously worked at the University of Wisconsin as an associate professor and currently holds that same position at the Alabama A&M University in Huntsville. She has published these are just a few, at least five articles in professional journals. I'm sure it's much more. And she has conducted research in areas such as parenting, grandparenting, cognitive development, obesity and mass media, and internet partner violence among college students. These are all just a little bit of the work that you will find when you get on the internet. And trust me when I tell you that this does not begin to capture her academic accomplishments. So I hope she will forgive me. And let me go on to just welcome you, Dr. Anasuri. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Dr. Rose. That was a beautiful introduction. Appreciate it.
Okay. Now, anything you want to, I know I missed some things, but anything you have done recently that I don't know of that you want to share with us?
Absolutely. Yes, the mass media, impact of mass media on young adults has been happening for the past 3 years now. This is our third year. But recently, this year, we have started a new research project, and this is about resilience in three different age groups, children, youth, and adults. And the data on the adults has come in a little bit of it. We have 100 samples so far. We are planning to shoot for 200, but we do plan to study children and youth as well on how children go through their life events and still spring back up to their normal, and normal is always under quotations because there's no one way to define what is normal. So to their well-being, right, isn't it? To their well-being of their fullest potential. So we call it well-being rather than just being normal. There's no normal, right?
Uh-huh.
There's always a state that works for one and works more well for some more others.
Right.
So resilience has been our favorite topic this year. And we plan to extend that all the way to Africa and Asia. And two connections have been already made in Africa, one in Ghana, one in Nigeria, mm-hmm. and the third one is happening this week as we speak from Kenya. Another young lady has showed interest, so we are going to expand our research into that country as well. And besides that, we also have, yes, ma'am, and one more connection in India on resilience. So we plan to collect at least 1,000 samples. Right. Anything we do is always in thousands. So like mass media, we have now up to 1,700. 1,700 so far, and we are shooting for 2,000 samples. So once we do that, we try to go ahead and compile, analyze, and start to publish our results. That's going to happen end of this year, and resilience as well. So that's what is happening in my life at this time.
I tell you, you are one busy lady, because I'm telling my listeners, I had to wait how many semesters just to get you on the show tonight.
Well, this worked out. You're just too kind. This worked out just great because the semester just ended 2 weeks ago, and last week we were writing and finishing up a whole set of wrap-up documents, and now my good week started today.
Okay.
And it started with Dr. Rose's show. Yay.
Okay, guys. So let's get into this, because this is one of those topics that really just really burns my heart just to think about, much more to just read the reports. So, of course, many of you know that suicide is one of those social issues that no one wants to talk about until it happens in their family. And what I find is that even then, family members have guarded conversations about it after it's happened. Now, I was looking at a report from the National Center for Health Statistics, and that report really had alarming trends. You know, they looked at, you know, rates of suicide going all the way back from 1999 to 2015. And what they saw was, you know, a 24% increase from 1999. And that was across the age, you know, groups. And the only age group that did not show an increase was 75 and older. And I'm telling you, when I saw 75 and older, my mouth dropped, because I didn't realize that people as old as 75 and older were committing suicide. Now, the good news, folks, I don't know, for me, when I saw that, the one group that was not highlighted as having, you know, numerous incidents of suicide was Black men. Thank you, Jesus. There is something that they are doing right. They are not killing themselves. I'm wondering. I won't go there. And before I ask you my first question, I want to also share with my listeners what's happening with the young people, because that's my greatest concern. The Center for Disease Control cites suicide as the third leading cause of death among young people, with 4,400 deaths every year. And Here's the piece of 100 attempts. There are, for example, the way I break this down is, for every suicide that is successful, there has been 100 attempts. Now, that is scary. That is very scary. You know, 14% of high school students have considered suicide, and nearly 7% of them attempted it. And this is why we are talking about this, especially tonight. So, I know you have looked at this topic, this subject, more intensely than I have. So my first question for you, which is really bothersome, when you look at acts of terrorism or you know, murders, and any other form of killing, we find that people really seem to be more passionate. Not that they like, but we seem to pay more attention to a murder than we would when someone commits suicide. Have you looked into that and can share with us why we see this sort of indifference in terms of the response to suicide?
Absolutely. The minute the word murder is mentioned, it triggers a lot of emotion, and people say, how can you take someone else's life, and that is not acceptable. And immediately the policymakers jump in, the societies frown upon such actions, and people are put behind the bars. They are tried for committing a murder, for sure, because they are not supposed to harm or hurt someone else, and murder is not acceptable. It is so intentional, taking life of other people. It impacts other people's families. That is frowned upon, and it also can actually build rivalry between countries, right? That's what we see. And you happen to use the word terrorism, and terrorism is murder of others. Others living in other country or in your country, just because they look like other different people, they talk different, they pray different, worship differently, I should say, or believe in love differently, or marry differently. You name it, there are differences between human beings, and that's the world we live in. The minute the differences are highlighted, individuals who are more keen on terrorism, like you said, and they are more passionate, and I'll use the same word because they are deeply passionate about their own ways of doing things. And the minute they see a different lifestyle, they engage in this harmful, hateful, and barbarous act called murder. And when such action is taken upon, everybody is ready to comment, take action, do the trial, go to war. That's the extreme we are going to see very soon, right? And that is murder. That's how serious it is. But when you turn to suicide, it is also a murder, but it's not hurting anybody else, but it is hurting and almost taking your life out of your own body. And why does one person do that? And it is always different reasons. Again, it could be just plain bullying. I'll not say just for any of these reasons, okay? Because none of them are anything smaller or lesser important. An act of bullying at school for a 12-year-old, act of bullying at work for a 30-year-old, right? Domestic violence, love failure, job or career losses, accidents. I lost a leg, now I feel like I shouldn't live anymore because I feel like I'm a burden to my family, right? So anything that happened to you in your life and that you didn't plan for, and now we have to mention the war veterans for sure, because they come back after seeing so much horror in that period of time of service that they go for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or even 1 year. When they return, their mental status is so very different. So you might say, hey, they have seen enough war. They will not harm themselves because they are strong men and women. Actually, it is the opposite. These are the strong men and women who have seen so much horror that that experience has damaged their brain. And we talk only about, yes, ma'am, and that is called PTSD, and we use the term very loosely. And it is one of the many, many mental health issues that our country needs to talk about. And the minute we say health, we only talk of physical health. We ignore a big portion called mental health. And that is the main reason these many suicides are actually even happening. And folks with depression, anxiety, withdrawal, getting low grades for young children and youth and college-going young adults, it could be any single or multiple factors combination, right? And can lead to these thoughts, right?
I'm going to have you go into that a little bit more, but each you touched on something that brings me to the next question that I have to ask you. In many ways, we've already said that suicide remains an unspeakable problem. People don't like to talk about it. And like you said, and I mentioned, murder invites like righteous indignation for those who are left behind. Now, what I have seen in terms of comments, I have seen it said in reports and documents that I've read that suicide is a crime with only one victim, no perpetrator. And for me, that is partially true. And the only part of that that is true is that there is no so-called perpetrator. For me, I think the assessment is wrong, because those loved ones who are left behind, they have to grapple with conflicting emotions about their deceased loved one. So what I want you to do, because this is issues where you have feelings of pain and the feelings of compassion. You hurt, but you're sorry for the person. And you have issues, emotions of anger and all of that. So what I want you to do is speak to those, what I call hidden victims, the family members, the friends, the loved ones who are left behind. I want you to speak to some of those conflicting emotions that these people experience.
Excellent, because that's the perspective that the government or the public or policymakers never focus upon, because all they see is, yes, one person is a perpetrator, one person is the victim, so one loss of life. So what's the big deal? Why should we focus so much on that when here on this other side where one person is the perpetrator and 100 people are killed, and that is mass suicide or murder, acts of terrorism, that we would like to focus more upon. And we forget what you excellently put together as hidden victims. These are the family members. It could be spouse, children, partners, parents, relatives. And there's a beautiful term called ambiguous loss. That was coined by Pauline Boss, Dr. Boss, from Minnesota, University of Minnesota. Right? You are aware, right? And she talked about family stress, and she's one of the psychotherapists. She worked intensively when the 9/11 has happened in the New York area. She took a team of folks to address how one person feels when someone close to them vanishes, disappears. Not sure we could find the body, and that was that time. But for applying it to a suicide case, sometimes you could see the body based on how the action actually happened. Sometimes you all you see is a note or just disappearing of the person, and you come to know about this loss through somebody. And that is hard for a family member to process. It's denial. It's shock first thing, right? It cannot happen to my son or my brother or my father can't do this or my partner was just fine until yesterday and suddenly what happened today? Because you have missed the signs, and we'll talk about warning signs later on, but you were not prepared for this. You didn't plan this. And the person who committed suicide has been contemplating this for a while. You don't know. You just are not aware. And this comes to the family and friends and colleagues so unexpectedly, and it's just conflicting. And they are now hit with emotions like, I thought he was just fine. What happened? I thought she was doing well, and suddenly, how did this happen? So they are confused. They are in shock. They are in pain, and they cannot grapple with the fact that the person is now gone. And now they kick themselves, if I can use that term. What did I miss? How come I didn't see the signs for years now? Maybe sometimes they last for years, and some could happen. They are happening in the person, but others don't just see them. And I want to underline the words see, because all signs are not visible. Oftentimes they could be internal for that one person, and you have to be really close to the person and interact with the person to really understand what is going on with this individual. Until then, you don't know. You will never know what exactly is bothering this individual. And
what about
it could be
of blame? One of the emotions that seem very strong is that of blame. How have you seen that show up?
Well, because you know what people do usually when they didn't recognize it, right? Now what can they say? Oh, it's my fault that I didn't see my brother going through this. They usually blame it on the brother. The one who died is at fault. Because now, I know, right? That's just pathetic that we just blame the person who is, he couldn't handle the pressure of life, so he just did it. Because they don't want to turn it on to themselves because they didn't get to see the warning signs. They couldn't help. Now they feel the shame and guilt, but they turn it around and blame the person who died. The victim is to blame because he didn't know how to handle life. That's why he died.
Wow.
He didn't know how to deal with the family situation. That's why she took her own life. And we call them names. We call them by very mean and derogatory terms because we think just because they couldn't handle and they couldn't face the challenge of life, they took their life. And we assume they didn't try hard enough, right? That's the way we go with that. That's our premise of understanding others who died of a suicide or committed of suicide. That's the way we take that and say, she couldn't handle it.
Words,
she didn't try enough. What's that?
Yeah, in other words, what we do, we turn around and we victimize the victim again.
There you go, because it's easy and we can't find fault with ourselves because we think we were doing just fine by understanding the person. We haven't even tried. We just see the superficial smile of a person doing the work on a regular basis. She's cooking and cleaning normally. Okay, everything good. He's going to work, and I'm actually giving some stereotypical examples. The children are just fine, having fun at school, good. All fair and square because it looks fine outwardly. But little do you realize until after it's over. That's the problem. Until after it's over, that's when individuals realize, looks like there was an issue at work, at school, in her life. We are not proactive people. We wait until it happens. That's the society we live in. We don't bother. We bother more about terrorism in the world. We are more concerned about who's bombing who and who is making fun of which religion, right? Or we talk about LGBT.
Right.
We talk about the differences between people that are very obvious. We forget the emotional health, emotional well-being, of individuals. We just don't give that much importance. Within the family itself, father, mother, children, whoever is in that group of family, we hardly bring it to the table. All we talk is grace. Right. All we talk is money. Or we talk about sex. We talk about possessions, what house we are buying, what car should we buy, where do we move, where do we go for vacation. Did any father or mother ask a child, how are you feeling today? How are you doing at school? How did you have a good day? So the day was good, but me was not so good. You didn't ask me, remember? So I want to challenge all the parents who are listening to make sure they understand the child, the spouse, the relative, the parent, whoever it is that you're talking to, ask them about them. Don't ask about the day. The day is always good. It's how it impacts you and how you feel is going to be different from person to person. So we just assume many things.
You know, there are two questions that seem to be coming out of what you just said. And right now, I am conflicted as to which one to ask, but I am going to take a chance here.
Go ahead, we do both, whichever one it is.
There are two incidences that happened within the last week. Now, there was a report about an 8-year-old kid from Cincinnati who took his life two days after he was allegedly kicked and struck by his classmates in the public school. I don't know how many people might have seen that it happened in their bathroom, and everything was caught on camera, and the school officials didn't even seem to understand the gravity of what happened. And even when the child went home, it seemed as if the parents didn't realize what had happened. So now we have two things. The death certificate says suicide, but then we have the issue that it could have been complicated by the fact that the kid was hit in the head or something like that. But here is the reports also say there are a few cases of suicide among children 8 years old and younger, believe it or not. So here is my question. Suicide is a complex ordeal.
Right.
And the kids under age 10, the reports show that kids under age 10, more 9 and under, they don't have the full capacity to put together such an elaborate plan. And since you specialize in child development issues, I want you to help us understand how on God's earth can an 8-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, what would push such a young child into committing suicide? I mean, how does that little brain put together that scheme?
Wow, that's terrible. I'm just actually looking at that video right now as you speak, the 8-year-old Ohio Cincinnati fellow. And like I said earlier, bullying is one of the major causes for a young child to even contemplate that. And they cannot go back to school. When they say they don't want to go to school, parents don't listen, right? Because they cannot understand. They think it's an excuse the child is making to avoid school, but little do they realize that there's something major going on that is making the child say that. And that's a warning sign right there. If the child says he doesn't want to go to school, the parents should go find out what it is. And the child needs to be talked to about it and ask questions. Somebody bothering you, something bothering you, a teacher, a peer, a classmate, a senior student, it could be anybody, girl or boy. And we do know Mean Girls, right? That's one of the movies that we saw, how mean a high schooler can be. And high schooler actually is 14, 15. Right. And now you're talking middle school. Children can learn these behaviors. And these children might be coming from their own backgrounds, very different backgrounds, each one. Either it's a spoiled brat, or it is a person who's seeing a lot of domestic violence, or someone who is just doing this for fun. Little do they realize they are going to take someone else's life. Sometimes children do things for innocent reasons, but they don't know how much hurt they are causing to this other peer of their own age or younger or older age. Sometimes 10-year-old can bully a 12-year-old or 14-year-old can bully a 10-year-old. Under 10, under 12 is very few in number. And this week with this 8-year-old, we are seeing more of that. And it just alerts all the families and parents especially to stay awake and alert. See the mood.
What is going on? How does that little brain, thinking that an 8-year-old, how is that brain putting together this thing? What could we imagine that's
such
going
action,
on in that
sometimes such bullying action can happen once, or it has been happening for months. We have no clue. And environmental factors, we call these, when they happen from outsiders and outside elements, we call them environmental factors. When stress, even if it is small or big, and that's where my resilience topic comes into play. Stress, harassment, bullying, relationship problems. Adults think of relationship problems. You should remember friendships for a child are very crucial. And they learn that in their middle school. And if that doesn't work out, that's a huge stressor. And what goes on in the child's mind is, okay, if he doesn't accept me to be part of their team, I'm no good to be even alive now. That's how the mind works, because that's so important for the child to be part of that group. And we call the word clique. We call peer groups. We call gangs. Gang is a negative term, but it's a group of people. Doing anything, it could be in class activity. I don't want to be your friend. You're not sitting at my desk. That's enough of a humiliation the child can face in a classroom of 20 people. And if I say that to you, I'm the bully, right? And I say that to two children, you're not going to be part of my activity. And that puts off these two children. Either they can be strong and bully and become revengeful, or we'll get withdrawn. First thing is mostly withdrawn because I'm hurt, right? I get hurt and my feelings are hurt and I'm humiliated totally in front of the group, and now I don't know what to do. I have rage, like I said, or I have humiliation. And next time I want to participate in any group activity, I'm anxious now that I know people will have opinions about including me. And then eventually I'm depressed. So all these moods go through my mind and nobody's even paying attention. And sometimes I can become aggressive, break things around and talk back and say bad words. And anything that is unusual in a child is a sign. And the mood
that
is in your mind.
That can be painful,
It is. For the child, it is very, very... Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And parents have to be watching this. Teachers have to be watching this. The peers who are his best buddies should know. You seem to be getting ticked off by Jonathan or Katie's behavior. Let it go. If they can say that to him or her, they'll try to learn that, okay, rejection is part of life. Sometimes when people don't accept me, it's okay, I can move on. But as a young child, you want to be the good boy and good girl. You want to be liked by others, right? And for adults, we have that need. And imagine a child going through anything small. And remember, this is not small. It may be looking like a small thing to the adult's mind, but I'm 10 and I'm not accepting you to come to my desk. There you go. It's a huge rejection and it's humiliation. And I'm developing anger against you, but I'm feeling helpless. I can't kick you. I can't punch you. And I have to hold my anger and rage inside me. Eventually, I'll be depressed. And if it happens more than once or twice, and imagine how much pain I'm gathering. And that shows out. That shows out in my behavior. And if nobody is checking my behavior, I don't sleep, I don't eat well, I don't sleep fully, and my grades go down, right? And all of this adds to my pain because I was a good student. Now one student said to me, and now my grades fell down, my parents are unhappy, my teachers are unhappy,
my peers
who were at least, I hardly had a couple of friends, and now they are moving to the other group and they don't want to be friends with me. Imagine this much can happen for a child's life within 6 months, within one semester, within 2 months. And if this happens, yes, now what do I say? I say to myself, looks like I'm no good here. I don't need to live anymore. And here starts the seed for a suicide attempt. I have no reason to live because I'm not on that team and nobody's friends with me and I'm in pain.
Now, here, that takes me now to the issue of the warning signs. You mentioned that some signs can be seen and there are others that cannot be seen from the outside. So what I'd like you to do is to just tell our listeners, what are some of those telltale signs? We know that there are like three major categories, behavior, mood, and I'm trying to remember what the other, and talk. Talk,
right.
Behavior, and mood. Can you share with us some of the signs that would come out of those categories, those areas?
Sure. And like we said, anything that could be painful, an experience on one day or experience over time can cause this mood change, right? Anger, pain, hurt, humiliation is one of the biggest ones that I feel like I don't want to live anymore because I have seen very nasty things. I have seen enough. And the signals for people, outsiders, to look in a person would be me saying goodbyes, giving away my important things and possessions, often talking about, I don't need to live anymore. Oh, I'm done living. Or I'll say, what's the point of living anymore? Or if I say, I'm not good enough for this class. I'm not good to live anymore. I'm burden to others. Or what's the point of me just continuing? Or if I feel guilt and shame, or I'm searching online, if I could be actually searching online to make a plan, I do not have access to a gun, I do not have access to pills or chemicals, but I do know there are some ways of killing myself. So if a parent catches me surfing online to look for ways of killing myself, then it's a huge sign, right? Nobody should be, a child especially, or young adult. Nobody should be even searching for suicide topic. And then they say, that's just sad and pathetic and dangerous and just unfortunate. And I'm using more alcohol. I'm acting anxious. I'm acting agitated. I'm withdrawing my family and friends. Every time there's an activity, I say, no, I don't want to participate. Or, like I said, sleeping and eating habits change. I could go to two extremes, one of the two. One could be withdrawal like this and act differently. One could be the opposite, being very revengeful and filled with rage, throwing things and saying profanity, using profanity. And parents should catch that. And all these signs could be, like you said, they are physically observable, emotionally very observable, if you know the person before that, if you know the person close enough, you can identify them. And they are looking for medical cabinet, they are looking for chemicals under the sink. Nowadays, we do know the technology has helped our children and young people and middle-aged adults too. They find ways to kill themselves. Simple.
It
could be just. It is crazy. It is just. It is sad and pathetic to see those ways of dying or ways of killing themselves. And sometimes
yeah,
we should also
talk
watch
about
for
that.
The risk.
What I looked at when I saw that report, that the method of killing suicide, the number one is weapons.
Guns.
The gun.
Weapons, yes. Yes,
and
gun
then
at
we
home.
Talk about poison, and you know all of that stuff. I mean, it is. But I want to go back to something you were saying when we talk about the behaviors, the telltale signs.
Right.
One of the behaviors that really seem to surprise many of us who do pay attention is the one where you saw the person maybe a few minutes ago, an hour ago, and they were happy, laughing, giving everybody joke and all of that. And the next thing you know, that person took his or her life. What?
Right.
What is that all about?
Because they do not want to. They don't want to explain
alert
to
anybody.
Nobody. Yeah, share it with nobody. That's the whole point. They fear that somebody will stop them from doing what they want to do, what they plan to do. So they cover it. They have this fake facade, just to act normally. Again, the normally word is always in quotes. Act as if as if nothing is going on, because they want to tell the world everything is fine, but they do know it's not. But they are contemplating. That's the phase of contemplation. And it goes through for some for months and years. They contemplate suicide. Some individuals contemplate suicide for years. Are they waiting? Are they waiting for the right time? Do they want to even die? No, they do not. Why did they do this? Because they tried to get out of this. So nobody wants to die. That's important. Let's remember that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to die. Life is so beautiful and precious. But it is the agitation that is going on in their brain. It is the anger. It is this aggression. At the same time, it is this sadness that is coming up on them, the depression. And everything put together, don't know how to handle it. They try. These stressors are really strong. For some human beings, it's too much to handle. So that is the case. Those are the cases who attempt suicide. Those are the ones. And risk factors are actually different groups. Many, many groups, like low risk, high risk, elevated risk. Yes.
Okay. It's amazing that you just said that some people can handle things better than others, because...
Right.
I was looking at a New York Times report, suicide based on demographics, statistics.
Oh, yes.
Like, gender, ethnic groups, economic status, and stuff like that. And this was really shocking. do you have, what we look at, we know that suicide cuts across all lines, socially, gender, economic level. What are some of the numbers you're seeing out there? Because, this report shows something alarming. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing Wyoming tops. In our country, Wyoming is number one. And when we talk numbers, these are suicide rates, right? These are rates for every 100,000 population. Across the country, the numbers are at 13 people, right? But remember, per day, we have 121 suicides. And that's a lot of people dying in a day. Although, nationally, we call it overall, in the all ages put together group, suicide is the leading cause. However, when you just take the 10 to 12 and 12 to 24, so let me say 10 to 24-year-olds, suicide is the second leading cause. And you mentioned how many attempts they take, they make before they can actually take their life. Across the country, it is 25. It is 25 attempts they make. And then, and for children and youth and young adults, it is 12. Imagine 11 people who attempted didn't take their life, but the 12th person took their life. So there are 12 people for every 100 who are attempting suicide. And that's sad, and that is huge. It is 10% are thinking about, and these are young adults. Can you believe it? This is our youth. This is our future generation, and who are contemplating suicide. That's sad situation we are in this at this time.
You know, as and, you talk about that, one of the things that I looked at too, which was, it was surprising, but not so surprising. It showed that unmarried men have dramatically higher suicide rates, and that white Americans are much more likely to commit suicide than minority individuals. When I looked at that, here, what was frightening is, and that goes to the statement that you made, that some people seem to be able to deal with some things better than others. Now, this is where I was surprised. When they compared the, you know, white Americans to minorities, they looked at affluence. And the comparison was minority individuals seem to have borne the burden of, you know, those hardships and difficulties that come out of lack of employment and all the other cultural prejudices and so forth. So I don't know. I mean, have you looked at anything to show? Why is it that these people who had life wonderful, they were top of the line in their great affluence? How is it so easy now? Is it that they're the ones who can't bear the hardship?
Well, because, you're so on the target. It is Hispanics, Asian, Pacific Islanders, and Blacks. These are these three ethnic groups have the lowest suicide rate. When you separate them by ethnicity, these are the three at the very, very low, like six. A single digit is beautiful. Compare that to whites, which is like 17. The highest in any ethnicity or race is American Indians, which are the Native Americans. They are at 20. They are at 20, and that's a lot.
That's another story. Yeah.
Right.
That's,
and they've seen a life, and like you said, you were mentioning the sociological factors, the economic factors, the discrimination, the oppression that has gone in the history of USA. They speak, right? And then my favorite topic, resilience, comes into picture, because who take their own lives? Who? Those who have low thresholds of resilience. Those who see a combination or culmination of these life experiences, feeling them to be unbearable. And sometimes they are unbearable, not that other people have any lesser issues or struggles. They just make it work. And it's again, sociologically determined. And why a white person, like you mentioned, who has well-to-do, and suddenly he takes a life, he or she, what's the matter? Imagine this other person who is struggling and living on, WIC and food stamps and what have you. He's still working, still has this hope. And the big word whenever we talk suicide is hope. And hope and faith, having to see the light. And whenever these individuals, they finalize their death, because this is in their hands, right? When they finalize their death, they have given up hope for a better life.
Yeah.
They have seen only darkness. And they convert everything good that happened in their life into darkness. And that darkness overwhelms them. And they see nothing but dark. And
nothing but
so
dark.
When that light is missing, that hope, the light of hope is missing, no matter you are rich, no matter you are male or female, sometimes the male-female factor does work because females always think beyond themselves. They worry for their families and children. So the rate of deaths among females is much lesser comparatively.
When you
compare the male and female, like you said, it's 3.5 times more men suicidal rates compared to the women. But across the country, I want to give some numbers because that gives you a picture across the country. Because like I said, Wyoming is number one. When we said 6 and 10 and 20 as our numbers by the ethnicity, let me give you some numbers, right? Wyoming is at 28. So that's the topper in the country. Then Alaska. And Florida, you guys are in good shape. You are on 29th position.
Yes.
You are in the 29th rank in the country. But the deal is, it is still 14 people for every 100,000. That is still 14
That's
people
right.
dying.
And
but imagine in Wyoming, the studies actually show the northern states, Wyoming, Utah, Dakota, especially the South Dakota, then Montana, Idaho, these are all very detrimental. They're all the cold places, and lack of sun is one reason. Lack of work, lack of social life. They say all kinds of reasons when they describe these icy states. They mention things like those nature, social factors, and the depression is being higher in these states. That's why the suicide rates are higher. But when you go down to the south, when you go down to the south, which was this one? Let me see the blue one. Oklahoma is also a topper. It's got 20 people in the state as a rate. And then we also have, let us say, New Mexico is a shocker. New Mexico is supposed to be bright light. See, that we just contradict ourselves when we say research. We just said that's how the numbers are across the country. We once say, it's all the snow places that are causing gloominess and people are depressed, so they die more. No.
New Mexico is
hot. Burning hot, and you have 23%.
You know what I'm thinking?
That's just amazing. I really
the end that you have a lot of Indians.
Native American. Absolutely.
So
that could be one of the reasons. Do you know one shocker? We think New York is the place where a lot of trouble is, but guess what? They are the last 50th one in the ranking. They are at the bottom of the list. So you go to New York, you are less likely to die. I know we're not supposed to be joking about suicide, but the happiness level, the contentment in life, whether you're rich or poor, whether you are young or old, you are male or female, it's all in your mind and in your surroundings. So it's nature versus nurture. It's nature and nurture. So the environment plays a huge role, although you as a person can also play an impact on how this trouble lands into. Does it land into struggle and then challenge, facing the challenge and then survive? Or struggle and facing the challenge and then give up? When you give up, that's when you start to
It has a lot to do, too, with how we are taught at a young age to cope with challenges. And I'm going to open up the line to see if anyone has any comments about anything that we have said or have any questions they may want to ask. I'm going to give people a chance to ask a couple of questions before we get ready to close here because we still have not touched
No, we didn't.
We talked about a broad, surface of this, but there's so much left to talk about.
Absolutely,
so I don't know
right.
if anyone has any questions. This is your moment to ask your question before we close off for the evening. Hello, out there on Radio Land. You know, my listeners, they're very quiet people, okay?
They're absorbing.
Either that
important.
Or we have covered many of the questions that they would ask. So I am going to suggest again that if you have questions about anything, you can follow up on Facebook where we continue the conversation and we will get answers for you, and we will also make suggestions as to where you can get your questions answered. But again, I want to thank you. I don't know. I hope anyone out there with a question? Any comments? This is your last chance. Okay. Guys, now, do you have Dr. Anasori? Are you going to be working on Mondays for next semester, or you don't know?
This summer, I'm off Mondays.
Oh, so we can get you back later this summer.
Absolutely.
All
I do
right.
want to share a few things. People usually, I want to close out, of course. I know you're trying
uh-huh.
to wrap up. I want to
no,
close
go ahead.
Out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of things. One is there are certain myths about suicide. People say, hey, people
mm-hmm.
who talk about suicide won't really do it, which is wrong. And people, if they say, if a person is determined to kill himself or herself, nothing is going to stop him or her. So don't even bother stopping them or talking to them, right? And there's
mm-hmm.
some, that's wrong too. And there's some more group of people who say talking about suicide may actually give someone the idea. So don't ever bring it up. That's wrong. You want to bring it up because you want to make sure that is not on their mind. Especially for
uh-huh.
children, they don't even know. And for young adults, and which is very tempting because they say, I don't want to be a burden to the family, so let me just close out my life. You want to stop it. So another one is people who attempt suicide and do not commit suicide are just trying to get attention. They are not actually serious. Well, guess what? They are trying to get your attention, but it's not in a way that you think a child of 5-year-old is trying to get your attention. No, they're telling you some things that you need to focus and pay attention to and say, looks like the person needs help. That's your job when you want to help somebody. And there are a few things that you do not want to say to a suicidal person. Definitely saying, hey, suicide is selfish. You're killing yourself, great. However, you're going to pain for your family. That's very selfish of you. And you also don't want to say suicide is cowardly. It's shameful that you are actually giving up. People say these things, very strong and powerful words, and you're not supposed to say this to a person who's already withdrawn, depressed, anxious, humiliated, and doesn't even know a name to name their mood at some times. So you don't want to say, hey, how could you think of suicide? Your life is not that bad. And suddenly you just negate their pain. And that's not wise to say that. And then think like, I know, right? So many things. You have so much to live for. What makes you die? And you are just closing out the chapter. Instead of opening up the person's inner voice, what you're saying is, hey, just shut up and live. You can't say that to a person. You have no clue. And that's where the word sympathy and empathy comes through. And if someone cannot empathize with that other person, you are in no business of helping that person. You can get out and somebody else can play that role. And sometimes you also silver line it. We like to do that. You know what? Things could be worse. What are you worried about? You think today you want to die because of this, this, and this problem? Guess what? It could be worse. Your house could be blown away. Your leg could be cut off. But you are in good shape. So why are you thinking about dying? You have no clue. You have no clue. We think we are helping them by saying these statements, but...
To think about this, I am so glad that you shared that because, you know, sometimes we speak to issues thinking we are helping, but we are causing more harm.
Right. Immediately, you just actually made that person become a zero. So instead of helping and boosting their self-esteem and making them feel valuable and worthy of living, you just crushed it totally. And then we also use the religion card. We say, hey, according to X religion, you're not supposed to take your life out. If you do, you go to the opposite of heaven, wherever that is. Right?
We
play
that
card and we play that card very well because we think that will scare them.
Wow.
Painful when we use all kinds of cards against the person. Instead of you actually asking, why do you feel this way? What is the reason? What is causing you all this pain? Let me see if I can help you. All you say is, let me see if I can help you. Don't say you know it all. You could be going through your own issues yourself. So sometimes we can only listen. That's the best thing you can do for these young people or older people. No matter what age, we didn't even cover all those statistics. Ages 85 and above are actually, again, trying to kill themselves because they feel like they are the burden for the family. So every age group has a set of issues that could be bothering them and leading to a suicide. So what you can do is offer empathy. That's important. And if you don't know how to do that, just listen. Don't have to speak a word and say, I feel for you. I feel the pain, but you don't know really fully what exactly that pain is until you go through exact life. And we never, all of us have same exact life. All we can say is, I feel for you. I'm here to help, only the help I can offer. And if I don't know how to, I'll take you to any place that really offers the professional help. And I'll go with you. That's the offer that you can make. Yeah, that's the offer. You save the life by doing that. And every life is precious. We know that. And every person can save one life. We already made a difference in the country, in the world.
I am telling you, this has been a great help to me, and I'm sure for someone listening or who will listen afterwards. Because like I always remind you guys, if you could not tune in to the show live, you can listen to this episode on Facebook or on the internet after the show closes. Now, Dr. Anasuri, do you happen to have the National Suicide Prevention Number handy? Because people seem to not know where to turn for help.
Mm-hmm.
They see or suspect that someone might be in trouble.
Absolutely. There are two crisis lines. National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK. TALK could be 8255. So 1-800-273-8255. And they can call that and directly it leads to that prevention hotline. And there is always someone there to help you and talk to you. And there's another line specially for veterans. And remember, we started early in 1 hour ago about talking on PTSD and war veterans. For them, there's another crisis line as well. And they can also try the same number, 1-800-273-8255.
And worst case scenario, guys, we can always call 911.
That's the best way to go.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
and talk is the word. Talk.
Talk.
I really
appreciate you coming in this evening and sharing your expertise. I always look forward to talking with you on these subjects. And I look forward to having you again later this summer before you go back to your busy lifestyle. And we hope to address another family life challenge. And, guys, I'm going to leave with you this quote about suicide, and I want you to remember it. It says, suicide doesn't kill people. Sadness kills them. I'm repeating that. Suicide doesn't kill people. Sadness kills them. And again, I look forward to connecting with you guys next Monday. Probably no show because it's a holiday and I want you all to go out and have a fabulous time. And maybe we'll connect again week after Monday. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you again, Dr. Anasori, for sharing your expertise with us. Have a good evening, everyone, as we sign off for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Good
Alrighty.
Evening, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Pale moon, faded rose, passed out from a passion of pain, all alone in a photograph only. Passed out color remains.